Thank you, Janan. We've heard many times this morning the Insight project referred to, and so I'm now going to describe for you what that the larger collective Insight project is all about. As has been mentioned, this involves four individual sites: UAB, Wills, Willmar, and Bascom-Palmer. We, of course, want to acknowledge CDC's participation in this particular project, and I have no conflicts of interest to disclose. You've heard quite a bit about diabetic retinopathy, so I'm not going to revisit that material. It's been presented, the importance of it, the clinical aspects of it have been presented very well this morning. I want to jump right into what Insight actually is. And so, as has been mentioned, Insight is a collaborative project involving four centers across the United States, and the focus is to evaluate system-level and individual-level factors that influence access to eye care and the quality of that care received. As Janan has mentioned, the questions that were coming up following the prior presentation about how do we provide access to care, David's presentation on individuals who aren't coming and receiving care, the focus of Insight is to really identify novel settings in which some of this eye care might be able to be provided. Insight has basically two different components. What you've been hearing this morning are the site-specific projects. These are projects that the individual four sites undertake at their own location. And then there are network studies. And what I'm going to present here today is a somewhat interim analysis of our first network study. And this is referred to as the diabetic eye screening study, and the goal is to demonstrate the feasibility of using fundus imaging in community-based locations, specifically community-based clinics and pharmacies, to screen for diabetic retinopathy among patients who have diabetes, and to focus on underserved populations, because by and large, this is the group that we've pretty much been talking about this morning. And the goal was for each site to enroll a minimum of 500 patients. The overall project, this network project, had four aims, the first of which is to determine the average number of patients screened on a monthly basis, again, to get an estimate of really what's the potential yield from these approaches. The second is to determine the rate and severity of diabetic retinopathy among those who screen positive. To determine the rate and severity of diabetic retinopathy among patients who show signs of other types of ocular pathology. And Janan and I had a discussion yesterday about that particular aspect of the study, which I think you'll find quite interesting. Fourth is to determine the rate of patients who schedule recommended follow-up eye care. So again, to David's point, if we can do the screening out in the community, that's great, but to what extent are they then provided getting routine eye care for those diseases that are identified. And then finally, to provide some information, get some information back from the patients on their experience with the process. Okay. So as has been mentioned, these are the settings, these are the locations. At UAB in Birmingham, we focused on an internal medicine clinic at a county health system hospital in Birmingham. At Johns Hopkins, they focused on a downtown health plaza that was serving low-income individuals. At the University of Miami, a community not-for-profit health center serving uninsured and underinsured individuals. And at Wills, they focused on an outpatient pharmacy. And obviously, there are people in the room who can speak to much greater detail about those individual locations. The study design, again, coordinated across these sites to the extent possible. Type 1 and type 2 diabetes patients, 18 and older, they completed a questionnaire. They had distant visual acuity measured and then had their fundus images. The fundus images were then sent to the Wills Eye Telemedicine Reading Center, and they were graded based on a system that I'll show you in a minute. Physicians and the patients receive those screening results either by phone if they're urgent, if there's an issue that's been identified that needs to be addressed immediately, or by mail for routine follow-up recommendations. And then the patients are contacted 3 months after the screening, again, to collect that information on did they seek eye care and what their experiences were with the process. I mentioned the grading system. This is it here. goes everywhere from no diabetic retinopathy to background to pre-proliferative, and you can see the rest of the grades that are there. Again, that was done at Wills. The information was then transmitted to each of the sites to make it into the hands of the eye care providers and to the patients. So this is the data as we have it to date. Because we're all overachievers, the goal was originally 500, and as you can see, none of us were able to stay within those confines. I will state, even though there are four centers, Johns Hopkins data is currently being collected. I think they were supposed to be finished on Monday of this week, so their data is not included here. But this will still give you a flavor for the patient populations that we were seeing. The average age, about 55 across the sites. The majority of patients in all instances were female. The race and ethnic backgrounds very much reflect the populations that we were focusing on. In Birmingham, the majority were African-American. In Miami, the majority were Hispanic. And at Wills, the majority were African-American. So we do have some diversity here in terms of the sample. But again, reflecting those patient populations that we were targeting. In terms of clinical diagnosis, about these patients, the mean age at diagnosis was in the 40s, low 44 at Wills and UAB, 47 in Miami. Disease duration was about 9 years across all of the sites. Regarding when these patients reported, this is self-report now, their last dilated eye exam. At UAB, at our county hospital, half of them had had an eye exam within the past year. Now, this potentially isn't that surprising because in the county hospital, there is actually an eye clinic. But one of the issues that we addressed early on was that the relationship between the diabetes clinic or the internal medicine clinic and the eye clinic wasn't always clear, even though the patient had been recommended to go get an eye exam. To your point about follow-through, even though it's in the same building and they were there for one visit, the ability to then sort of follow through on that obviously wasn't always what it could be. And at Miami and at Wills, you can see the distribution looks a little bit different, with about a quarter of the individuals or a third reporting having an exam within the past year, and then smaller proportions And then visual acuity, as you can see there, some similarity between UAB and Wills, and a much different, much worse visual acuity at Miami. But I think we have some information from the fundus data that would indicate some reasons for that. These are the screening results from Wills, and again stratified by center. You can see that the prevalence of background, pre-proliferative, proliferative, maculopathy, et cetera, is shown there and is fairly consistent across all of the sites. Background DR somewhere around 20%. It's a little bit lower at Wills. The big overwhelming bar there, and this is the conversation we were having yesterday, was the other lesions that were found. Again, the goal here was to identify a diabetic retinopathy, in which we found a certain prevalence of and about what we expected. But I think the very dramatic findings, again, particularly at University of Miami, the 60% of the patients identified had some other type of lesion, and I'll let David comment on that perhaps when I'm done speaking. We have a little bit of data. It's basically cataract is what was being found at that particular location. Again, this part of the study is not necessarily news. We're simply showing here the prevalence of diabetic retinopathy by some of the patient characteristics. Here we're looking at it with respect to race and ethnicity, and there's some variation, but by and large, it's around 20%, regardless of the race or ethnic group. Obviously, the sample sizes vary here, so some of these estimates are going to be particularly unstable, particularly for the Asian group. Also, not surprisingly, the prevalence of diabetic retinopathy increases with duration of disease. It goes from 8% for those relatively recent, up as high as 40% with those of 14 or plus years of diagnosis. And the number of patients in this larger sample that had much longer standing disease was quite high. So again, these numbers are, unlike the others, fairly stable. We were also interested in looking at the prevalence of diabetic retinopathy by when they had their last dilated eye exam. And I'll also note that in this category of never and don't know, there are small numbers of individuals, so we'll obviously consider those unstable. But again, and those who had an exam relatively recently, it's as high as 40%, almost 40%. It drops down and then goes back up again. So again, is this real? Is this dip real, or is it variation? It's difficult to say. Obviously, one of our interests here was the settings in which the eye exams were being done and what the yield was. So if we look at UAB and Miami as being clinics, even though the settings are a little bit different, we found a little bit higher prevalence of diabetes. The original setting for the Johns Hopkins site was, in fact, a pharmacy. They have changed, so we were going to have a comparison of two pharmacies and two clinics. But again, just looking at the data from Wills as a single pharmacy site, the prevalence is a little bit lower. There are a number of other things that we did find, but the most prominent of which is, as I said, about almost half of the sample had some other type of lesion that was detected. And of those lesions, 50% were cataract. And of those, David's group contributed the bulk of them. But there were, again, a number of other ocular abnormalities which were mentioned as well. And this goes to, I think, one of the important aspects of this sort of process of screening for diabetic retinopathy in populations that perhaps don't get routine eye care, is that you have the ability with these techniques to pick up other types of eye conditions. And in the case of cataract, that's potentially treatable. Again, another process measure that is probably important to reflect on is that of the images that were sent to Wills, the current estimate, again, just based on the data that I'm presenting here, that about 12% of them were unreadable. So again, in terms of thinking about using this technology to transmit information, you know, using telemedicine for screening purposes, we have to accept the fact that in certain instances, and 12% of the instances, we're not going to get back usable information. Now, is this an issue of training, of taking the photos? Is it an issue of that the information's not being transferred properly? Again, I'll let the Wills folks perhaps comment on some of those cataracts. Interestingly, though, to that point, we did look at whether that was differential by the presence of cataract, and it wasn't. The ungradable lesions was very, very similar between patients that had cataract and not. So that may come into play with some of it, but it's not the overarching reason for it. So again, these process measures are important if we're going to think about using this in other types of clinic settings, other types of pharmacy settings. So where are we going with this? Obviously, we're waiting for the data from Johns Hopkins to be complete, so we'll at least have the baseline component of the project completed. The follow-up, to my knowledge, for the other three sites is complete. And so we can look at the proportion of patients who have then followed up getting eye care, et cetera. And I think that's going to be a very interesting part of this. We have to wait now for another 3 months for the Johns Hopkins piece to be complete. But nonetheless, we'll have some preliminary numbers ready from the other three sites to really get a handle on what those results are going to look like. And again, we expect that all of these analyses will be done by early 2014, and at that point we'll be able to report them, hopefully in a variety of different settings. And so obviously with the data not necessarily being complete, any summary that we provide is going to be tentative. But the bottom line is that diabetic retinopathy was detected in about 1 in 4 persons screened across all sites. We'll see what the data from the Wake Forest Johns Hopkins site will say, but my bet is it's going to be in line with this. The vast majority of the people screened were members of minority populations who are underserved with respect to eye care. Okay, so again, we were able to accomplish that goal of putting the technology in place, demonstrating that it can work and that it can serve individuals who may not normally have access to this type of eye care. And also, fortunately, that most of the diabetic retinopathy that was identified was in the earliest phases. Okay, so again, we can identify it. We can identify it in settings in which eye care may not be normally provided, and we can identify it early. And now we really want to have another bullet on here that shows, and the patients are following up, and hopefully we'll be able to say that. So again, this really, these recommendations are the things that I just went over. Really using this technology and this approach in settings, I think, really does address some of the questions that were coming up before about, you know, where are the places, how do we reach these patients at, you know, home visits, et cetera. You know, the clinics, the pharmacies, et cetera, are options to use this technology and to address this population. And so, again, I think that's part of the work going forward from this Insight project is to really start extending this this model. So I'm more than happy to defer any questions to David and Lisa. Thank you.
Questions?
That's because you were all involved in the project.
Anna.
Actually, we were higher.
But again, it was only a small portion, so my thought is that it's probably very little is due to operator error, but we know certainly pupil size, since they're non-embryonic photos, could be part of it. So I think we're going to have to say that even with the best training, there's going to be some portion, even if you can decrease it, there's always going to be a 10% or something unreadable.
Right. And I think that's important for understanding what the yield is going to be,
right.
Is that, you know, as long as we know that there's going to be some 10%, 10 to 15% that we're not going to get any images on, and is there a process in place to then follow up with those patients? But I suspect you're right. I mean, having looked at the data, I think I can only remember two instances where the photos were failed, to, they got lost somewhere in the, you know, in the ether. So, but again, it's a very important result in terms of...
And the other lesions that you said, cataract,
yeah, and I think this is more comment than question, but you can, you know, comment on it. I think most of the time when we talked about telemedicine and diabetic retinopathy screening, the idea was, and when they did, like, cost-effectiveness studies, it was like, you know, if you just screen for diabetic retinopathy, you're going to be missing, you know, this comprehensive eye exam and the other, you know, eye conditions that could be related if we're just focusing on diabetic retinopathy. And the beauty of this, that we're seeing that with this technology and with the way also of screening, we're really detecting other, you know, eye conditions that's going to, you know, make the argument a little bit maybe easier to the use of the telemedicine. So do you, I mean, is that...
Yeah, I think that's one of the take-home messages, that, you know, demonstrating that the prevalence of diabetic retinopathy is differential by race or by duration. There's nothing new there. There's nothing interesting there. Demonstrating that you can take a fundus photograph and send it someplace for someone else to read, you know, that's been done. It's been done in international settings for years. Demonstrating that you can do it in these settings in the United States, and that in addition to identifying diabetic retinopathy, you can identify other types of eye conditions. I think that's, you know, one of the valuable take-home points here. Okay.
Other questions? Thank you so much. Thank you.